Building on the Solid Rock with Pastor Troy Neely of Calvary Chapel's Solid Rock.
Let every family find faith in the Father's love. This is where it begins. This is our cry, this is our song, Jesus the way. We find our life in Him.
Are going to be on one of four things: circumstances, other people, ourselves, you know, what about me, or the Lord. If your eyes are on any of the first three, you're doomed to fail. You're doomed to be concerned, to struggle, to fear. You're worried about too many things. You'll drift because there's no anchor. There's no foundation in those things. They change. Cultures change, people change, our minds change, our fears are in and out based upon our emotions. We change, but God never does.
Join Pastor Troy today as he reminds us that when we choose things other than Jesus, we're doomed to struggle, fear, and fail. Your eyes will be on one of four things: your circumstances, other people, yourself, or the Lord. If your eyes are on anything other than the Lord, you'll have no anchor in your life. You'll drift depending on your own thoughts, cultural norms, your feelings, and a vast array of other things. Only the Lord never changes. Is He your anchor? Are your eyes focused on Him? Well, let's join Pastor Troy in Hebrews chapter 11 with today's edition of Building on the Solid Rock.
Some say that the Bible is outdated, and so they'll push it aside because it's outdated. Look at all the archaic language. Look at all the archaic attire and archaic customs. And while fashions change, obviously sandals and robes are no longer in, as those things change, let me just say God has not changed. God is no different. He's the same God over every single generation. The cultures change, the ideas change, but God never does. He never has. He's still just as concerned about substance more than style. What I mean by that is not, okay, this is today's clothes, that was then's clothes, I prefer them over this. I mean, that's what Jesus wore, just a robe. I'm not talking about that. I mean, why do you wear what you wear? Why do you do what you do? What is in your heart in all of this? And will you listen to Him? These are the things that he's concerned about, and that transcends all generations. If there's one overriding lesson in this list of faith giants that we've been reading about, it's that God is seeking those who will live by faith. Not by sight, not by emotion or our own personal desire or ambition, but by faith in him. No matter what generation they happen to live in, no matter what background they have. Because when you look at these heroes of faith, there are various generations with different, from different cultures, from different backgrounds that are all represented. We have kings, prophets, farmers, harlots, shepherds, soldiers, and even the son of a harlot. Many of them had very little in common with each other. But they had one thing in common, and that was faith in the Lord. And that's the one thing that God says made them great. Not what generation they were from, but who they put their faith in. We want to talk about that faith, the faith that we need to have as Christians, if we want to have a Hall of Fame faith, which we can have, and if we want to understand a kind of faith that fortifies our lives. Fortify. Webster's Dictionary gives us a definition of fortify. It's to strengthen and secure, to give physical strength, courage, or endurance to add mental or moral strength, a faith that fortifies, a faith that strengthens our resolve, that strengthens us. Verse 32 through 40 is sort of a summary now of some more names that he doesn't go into detail about or list anything about, but gives the names of those who were faithful in addition to who we've been breaking down over these past weeks. So we're going to spend a little time in verse 32, which says, "And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak or Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets." First thing we want to consider, faith fortifies our trust, strengthens it, builds it, establishes it. Gideon is one of the names listed. You want to talk about somebody who was a scared man. Gideon was a frightened farmer who knew absolutely nothing about battles, much less leading them, and yet God calls him to lead a battle. He's a farmer, and he's a scared farmer. He's so frightened that he's threshing the wheat, which should be threshed on top of the hill, on the high ground, so that the wind would blow the chaff away. He's in more of a valley so that people can't come out and look and see and take aim at him. He's hiding. He's scared. So he's making his work a lot harder because of his fear of the enemy. As the angel appears to him, the angel says to Gideon, who's threshing, not on the high ground, down in the low areas, "Greetings, mighty man of valor." Now, you know Gideon must have, like, "Me? Yes, you." See, what Gideon didn't know is what the Lord did know. God was going to do something great with him. Gideon would be remembered as a mighty man of valor, although he wasn't. He could confess that. I imagine after the battle, he could still say the same thing. "That wasn't me. That was the Lord." You know about those kind of victories, right? You get in, everybody says, "Oh, you were, oh, you, how did you, why'd you do this? And you were so faithful." You know it wasn't you. "I wanted to quit, but God just maintained me." And I mean, think about Gideon. Gideon was to take 32,000 men and stand against an army of Midianites whose number was, you couldn't count them, as the locusts of the field. Oh, but that wasn't a disadvantage enough, because God went further with Gideon and said, "We have too many. I'm not skilled in battle here. You know, I need as much help." But no. What Gideon didn't realize was, when you have God, it's enough. And so Gideon was told to let all those who are afraid go home. I mean, it's a massive army out there. So out of the 32,000, how many went home? Well, 22,000. You can imagine standing there, "Everyone who's afraid, I hope it's no one, go ahead and go home, you're free," and watching most of your army take off. Now, if you weren't a little nervous before, you're thinking, "This is worse." Okay, I thought, we have a disadvantage here, but now this is worse. But God said to him, "We have too many." You know why God said that? Because God doesn't need numbers. And the problem with having too many is too much strength, thinking you have enough strength, is that you can take some of the credit, some of the glory. God said, no, I want them to know this was not the army of Israel that got a victory. This was the God of Israel who got a victory. And so I want you to whittle it down. They were left with 300 to take on an innumerable number, and they got the victory. Now, listen, God's battle plan for him: take torches and light them. All right, that sounds easy enough for a farmer. Take some drums and bang them. Okay, all right, we got the worship team set. What do we do, though? What do the soldiers do? I want you to run and yell. Run and yell. Like with swords? What do you want? That was it. Reminds you of the plan, the battle plan in Jericho, right? The trumpets, march around and shout. Jars, you know. Here's what God always does with those who don't think they can do things. He only gives you what you can do. He doesn't give you any more than that. And he gets great victories when you just do what you can do, and he knows what you can do. So he says, "Here's what I want you to do. We're going to get a massive victory here, but it's not going to be because you did all the fighting. It's going to be because you obeyed me. You trusted me. And then I will show you victory." It was a plan that required either a fool or a man of great faith. And Gideon is known as a man of great faith. Now Gideon, he had to throw his fleece out. We know him for his fleece, right? He threw the fleece out, actually twice, right? Because he was uncertain, he was scared. And God honored that. God knew where Gideon was coming from. He knew this was a legitimate question. It wasn't questioning God. If this is you, Lord, if you really want me to quit my job, then you have this happen and this person call me and do that. Like, look, this isn't a matter of you not believing me. This is a matter of unwillingness. And you're saying jump through hoops. God won't do that. But when we genuinely need help, God doesn't have a problem with that. And God met his need for the fleece twice. Because the first time, or one time, it's, you know, make the fleece all wet and the ground all dry. And then he reverses it because he thought, you know, that could have been just something that happened naturally. I'll know it's you, Lord, if you reverse it. So God did it again. God even gave him more than that. God gave a dream, not to Gideon, but to the enemies. And so God told Gideon, go down there. Go down there. So he went down there with one of his armor bearers, servants, went down and he listened and he overheard a dream that one of the enemies had. And the dream was this big old, well, loaf of bread rolls in and destroys their camp. And the other guy, as he's listening to this dream, says, surely this is none other than the sword of Gideon. We're going to be destroyed. And Gideon was encouraged by that, going, man, God, You're gonna give the victory. It's like the Lord's going, oh, I said that I was going to give you the victory. And they got a great victory that day. Let me just say, you may feel overwhelmed in whatever it is that God sets before you. The numbers may be against you, stacked against you. Maybe you're the only Christian in a work environment, the only believer. Maybe you're the brunt of jokes and everyone outnumbers you. Seek the Lord. Stand firm in him because God is using you as a light and God is with you, you mighty man or woman of valor. God is with you. So take that stand. You know, our eyes are going to be on one of four things: circumstances, other people, ourselves, you know, what about me, or the Lord. If your eyes are on any of the first three, you're doomed to fail. You're doomed to be concerned, to struggle, to fear. You're worried about too many things. You'll drift because there's no anchor. There's no foundation in those things. They change. Cultures change. People change. Our minds change. Our fears are in and out based upon our emotions. We change. But God never does.
Pastor Troy will return soon with the second half of today's edition of Building on the Solid Rock, so stay with us. If you're enjoying the teachings of Pastor Troy Neely and would like more information about this program, we invite you to visit our website at buildingonthesolidrock.com. There you will also find an archive of previous messages from verse by verse, chapter by chapter, and book by book studies through the Bible. We'd also encourage you to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, as you'll be able to gain access to the latest teachings as soon as they're posted. That website again is buildingonthesolidrock.com. We're blessed to be a part of your life through the ministry of Building on the Solid Rock. We pray you're blessed as you continue to tune in. Now, back to Pastor Troy with more of today's message.
So if you set your eyes on him, if you set your heart on him, God has spoken, God is leading, and so I am holding on to it. Write those things down and don't drift. Hold on to the Lord, because sometimes that long road or the whittling down process to show you that it is God who's done it and not you makes you feel like things aren't going well. But hold on to those things and do what God's asked you to do, no matter how much they may call you a fool. And God doesn't care about odds. Martin Luther said, with God, one is the majority, which is very true. And like with Gideon, God often does more with less. When we begin to think more of ourselves, it means we're not on a good course. Things may not go well for us coming up in the distant or near future because we're starting to think we're okay. We don't even need to consult with the Lord or trust him much. I know he's there. I know God's there. But I don't really need him because I got it. So Look to the Lord. Trust Him. Remember, you're just but a Gideon, but God did some great things with Gideon. Then there's Barak or Barak. Most remember him as a wimp. Sisera and Jabin were attacking Israel from the north, and this was the time when Deborah was judge in Israel. Well, she wasn't a warrior judge. She was simply what was referred to as a mother in Israel. Basically, here's what the Lord would have you do. Here's what the Lord wants. Aren't you hearing clearly? This was a time that everyone was doing what was right in their own eyes. It was not set up right. And so God was using her as a counselor for the people, a mother in Israel. And people would go to her and, what do you think the Lord would have me do? What would the Lord want me to do? So they put their trust in her. She helped guide a lost nation. So she tells Barak, gather your army, fight against the invading armies, and only take 10,000. She gave some parameters that God had laid out. Take only 10,000 and from only two of the 12 tribes. So these were his instructions. Now, Barak said, I will only go if you go. Now, right there is where everyone starts to laugh and go, this wimp. He's a wimp. Let me at least lift him out of that stereotype for a moment. Because after all, God has put him in the Hall of Fame of Faith. And I want to find out for us to help understand why. See, we don't know exactly why he told Deborah, I won't go unless you'll go with me. But it probably was not because she was a battle-hardened warrior. She didn't even battle. When she went, she didn't battle. She guided. She gave him encouragement. Now, go. God's given the victory. Go. That's what she did. Encouraged. Here's what it seems like Barak wanted. He wanted her spiritual insight. See, if I'm going to go with these limitations, I'm already overwhelmed. I'm just a human. I want you to go with me because I need direction. I want to make sure that God is with me, is what he was saying. And you, Deborah, represent the Lord to the nation right now. I want you with me because when I want God's counsel, I'm coming to you. So in the end, the battle was won, and a woman, she said, okay, I'll go with you, but just know that it's going to be said in Israel that a woman got the victory. It wasn't Deborah that got the victory. It was a woman named Jael. Jael got the victory because she drove a spike through the enemy's head. He kind of came in for rest, kind of trusted her. She lulled him to sleep and got the victory. Don't tell me women can't be tough. Said, no, we weren't questioning that. But Barak is often remembered as a coward because of this whole event. In fact, I've even thought that too. You, man, what do you do? You're the soul. Go get him. God said, go get him. But that wasn't his heart. It seems his real motivation was, I trust the Lord and I want to hear from the Lord more than I want the 10,000 troops. God includes him here for a reason, in the Hall of Fame of Faith. The problem for Barak, if there's a problem, and there is one, because obviously it was said, okay, this is not the right order, this is not the right way, but if I go with you, no, you're not going to get the credit, but that a woman will. It's not the right order, but this is the way we're going to get victory. So his problem was that he had access to God, and he was told that God was going to give him victory, but he turned to a person instead. He wanted a person with him instead of being okay with just God being with him. The good thing, he wanted God with him. The weak thing, I want somebody with me too. I want a person. I want someone with skin on them. When we have faith in the Lord, it enables us to trust him in such a way that though none go with me, still I will follow As the song goes, right? The old hymn, though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back. No turning back. Early in our walk, God may bring someone beside us to walk with us. But there comes a time in all of our lives where God stops bringing partners all the time that help us and pick us up and walk us and do the baby talk. You're going to be okay. You'll be okay. You go walk by faith. You know, at some point, I'll stop doing that with my youngest, you know. She's always the youngest, so I just keep doing it. She'll be 18. I know you so much. You know? They never get to grow up. But God wants his children to grow up so that we depend on him. If no one is there, God is. And that was Barak's weakness. Not that he didn't have faith, not that he didn't want the Lord with him, but he kept putting his eyes on people or a person. So, the next is Samson. He's mostly remembered for his physical strength. When you read about Samson, though, that's the only thing you think he's notable for. Because everything else, he's immoral, he's self-centered, he falls many times, and you think, well, if that's living by faith, I can do that. Yeah, I want to be like Samson. No. You know, Samson, because of those things, his life was a mess. He got his eyes gouged out, lost his vision for the rest of his life, was imprisoned, got shaved. He didn't get to enjoy life at all. He stumbled one after the other. It was selfish, self-seeking. God used him. God used his strength because God would deliver Israel. And when God's going to do something, he'll even use a donkey to do it. But Samson missed out on so much in life because he was a rebellious man. And yet he's included here. Why? Because in the end, when he had time to consider things, though he had wasted most of his life, he was willing to give his life and did give his life for his God. He said, Lord, just give me the strength. He no longer had the vision. He wasn't waiting to get out of prison and go live life now. He gave himself for what he knew he should have been giving himself to all along. A lot of his life wasted. He never got to live it the way God wanted him or would have wanted him to. Yet at the end, he put his faith in the Lord. I'm willing to die. We all fall and we all waste time in our lives. The key is to recognize that and to get up where you are and to stop wasting it. See, you have to understand that when you fall, when you find out, man, I wasted time, life isn't over. You still have life ahead of you. And it's not the falling that keeps you from serving the Lord or being used by him. It's the not getting back up. You have to get back up. And know that if you will turn and confess your sin before the Lord, he will still use you. Things may change, and you may not have as much life left to live, but he can glorify his name through your life, no matter your age, what skill or strength or time you have left. He will use you for his glory, and he can do great things with you. Samson didn't live much of his life for his glory, but he's mentioned in the Hall of Fame of Faith. Remember, Peter denied the Lord 3 times. God restored him and used him. You may be surprised at this, but God doesn't expect perfection in those who serve him. He just wants you to learn to trust him, to follow him.
We are so glad you joined us today for Pastor Troy's study in the book of Hebrews. If you missed any part of today's teaching or would like to explore other Building on the Solid Rock messages, we invite you to visit our website at buildingonthesolidrock.com. You'll also find information about Pastor Troy and the church behind this ministry, Calvary Chapel Solid Rock. If you're in the San Antonio area, we'd love to have you join us for one of our weekly services. We meet Sundays at 9 and 11 a.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. to worship Jesus and learn all we can from the Word. You'll find location information and driving directions at buildingonthesolidrock.com. From all of us here at Building on the Solid Rock, we'd like to say thank you for tuning in today. We pray you continue to seek and find God's hand in your life and that you enjoy learning more about Him every day. Join us again as Pastor Troy continues sharing from the book of Hebrews, right here on Building on the Solid Rock.
Let the light of Christ shine as we grow in Him. Come have your way in us.
Come.